Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
This is the Yanks Go Yard podcast with Adam Weinrib and Thomas Carinante.
Welcome to the Yanks Go Yard podcast. I'm Adam Weinrib alongside Thomas Carinante. Good news for people who were bored of spring training. It's over after today. No more spring training. No more fake baseball. Only one more game against the Diablos Rojos. And Trevor Bauer will not be pitching in that one. So good news all around. The season begins in 3 days. And the Yankees have only lost one more player to the IL since the last time we spoke. But not a surprising one. Knock on wood, it's the last announcement we get. Some roster stuff still to be sorted out. The bullpen mix, settled, fifth starter, we got one. Who wants to bet a mystery infielder shows up before the season begins? Certainly me, because DJ LeMahieu's hitting the IL. That was obvious. We knew it already. It's backdated. He might not miss that much time. He also might. He wasn't exactly tearing the cover off the ball before he left. Anthony Rizzo back in the lineup today, but if you can get somebody on the open market who plays first base, you maybe should get that person. Luis Torrens already doing it at Yankee camp. They should still be seeking upgrades right now, and they are, because the two people who made the bullpen, we'll just congratulate them right off the top. Good news for Clayton Beter. Good news for Nick Birdie. Right now, they're going north with the team, and by north, I mean Houston, so kind of just sideways from Florida. But Joel Sherman was told that if the Yankees see an upgrade on the market they like between now and Thursday, one or both of those people may not actually make the opening day roster. Beter, who's got options, would probably go down. So they're keeping their eyes peeled. That's good. Got to have a little intentionality in crafting a bench so you don't end up just throwing random next man up, injured replacement, failed prospect types into the starting lineup and into bench roles when opening day rolls around. Oswaldo Cabrera is probably going to be starting on opening day. Beyond him, they don't exactly have a guy in the infield who I feel comfortable with at all. So time to go shopping. Thomas Carinante, thanks for joining. You can find us on all podcast platforms, Apple, Spotify, as well as live here on YouTube, 2 o'clock Eastern time every Monday, Thursday. Not Thursday, though. We won't be live. We'll give you a show Thursday, obviously, opening day. I believe, confirm this after the show today, because I know he's got a busy schedule. I think we're going to have a New York Yankees prospect on Thursday. Listen to that. Somebody who you'll hopefully be hearing more from in the next couple of years, if all things go according to my mental plan, you will. But before we get into all that, Thomas Carinante, hit the fans with an offer.
Yes. Hello, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. It's great to have you. Monday. What a day. 3 days until opening day, but DraftKings is here, offering a fantastic sign-up bonus for new users. New customers can place a $5 first bet on any sport to instantly claim $150 in bonus bets. And all you have to do is just sign up with the code YanksGoYard. It's the website, the podcast, YanksGoYard. The best part is that you'll receive your rewards even if that first bet loses. Pretty good deal. Using that code YanksGoYard not only gets you these bonuses, but it directly supports the podcast, Adam and Thomas, YanksGoYard.com, your favorite place to be. So why not help out? If you've been considering signing up for DraftKings, please be sure to use the code YanksGoYard to maximize your first bets. This offer is only available to new customers who are 21 and older and physically present in legal gambling states. Please remember to always gamble responsibly. Check the episode description for full terms of the offer to see if you qualify. Man, I do not want to be putting any wagers down on who's going to make this opening day roster, because now it's gotten dicey. Probably best for us to start off with the news we just got. Brian Cashman talked to the media. DJ LeMahieu is starting the season on the IL. Does that surprise you? No. Were we expecting that? Yes. Were you, the listener, expecting that? I sure hope so.
Probably.
because after he fouled the ball off his foot, you know how the updates went. Oh, he's fine. Oh, wait, he's not fine. He's going to rest. Oh, wait, it's really bad. Oh, wait, injured list. This is how it goes for the Yankees. They can never diagnose an injury properly or communicate it clearly to the media or to the fans. This isn't exactly upsetting. It might be upsetting to some, actually. Tempering expectations here is very important. We like DJ LeMahieu. DJ LeMahieu was once upon a time a very good baseball player. However, he has been borderline unplayable or just a backup player for 3 years now. He has not been healthy since the end of the 2020 season, and even that year he missed 10 games because of injury. 2021, he did play in 150 games, but if you remember correctly, he had the sports hernia issue all year, which he did not decide to address, or the Yankees did not decide to address until the AL wildcard game came around. This offseason, I think, offered some false hope for a lot of fans, hoping to see LeMahieu back atop the lineup, you know, wreaking havoc in that leadoff spot with all of the new names. This is the most talented lineup he'll ever be in. You know, you bring in Juan Soto, you bring in Alex Verdugo, you get year two of Anthony Volpe, you hopefully get a Giancarlo Stanton bounce back or a semblance of it. You got Aaron Judge in his prime. You got Anthony Rizzo back from the concussion. Many were thinking, oh man, if DJ can just set the table atop the lineup, we'll be in good shape. To me, I thought that was always an insane ask. He's turning 37 this year. Just hasn't looked the same. Various injuries have slowed him. Fairly serious injuries, too. I would be batting him anywhere between 6 and 9 at this point. I would not be batting him leadoff, but people felt differently. Either way, it ain't happening on opening day because he will not be available. We don't know how long it's going to be, but it's pertinent to the opening day roster conversation because once again, the Yankees have been ill-prepared from a depth perspective. It's looking bleak in terms of who's going to be on this bench, and the bench was already looking bleak. So now what we're looking at, Jamai Jones or Kevin Smith or someone, it's got to be someone from outside the organization if this team is serious about, you know, staying afloat in April. But yeah, right now the Yankees are not afforded any sort of convenience or luxury with DJ LeMahieu going down already for at least the first 10 days of the season.
Yeah, it's good that he's been up and active and getting agility work in at third base, but we knew he wasn't going to be ready. We knew he wasn't going to be himself if he came back too soon. That foot threw him off because of the toe, not because of the foot. Threw him off for a year and a half, basically. 2022, he was not real. In 2023, he begins the year looking much the same. The power is not there, and the power doesn't have to be a 25 homer guy. It just needs to be a threat. 650 OPS in May, 536 in June, 696 in July. Somehow in August, cranks it up to 898, 715 in September, October. If you want to feel optimistic about DJ LeMahieu entering the season, you cite that August. But if you want to be pessimistic, you cite all the rest, as well as the climbing age. He will turn 36 in July. So LeMahieu, the leadoff man, I mean, if you want to placate Aaron Judge and do what he says, sure. But there's almost no way that he's the best full-time leadoff man for this roster this year. It's probably Gleyber Torres or Alex Verdugo to start the season. It could be Anthony Volpe by the middle of the season, but not quite. I'd like to see him prove it a little bit. But LeMahieu's not even top three, really. And if you treat him like a bench player, the whole roster gets a lot better. But if you treat him like a starter who you got to plug in there, and then the bench is just a couple of failed prospects and some quad A guys and some flyers, Billy McKinney types who play third base, Jamai Jones, you know, Kevin Smith, the guys that you mentioned, Kevin Smith wearing number 14 in the Mexico exhibitions, had a lot of people saying, oh, are we going to put him on the opening day roster? Which somebody said to me, like, it could be worse. And I was like, I don't actually know if it could be worse. I don't actually think it could be worse. Just with the intentionality of a roster spot, a guy who hit 185 last year for the Oakland A's, if he goes to AAA and crushes it, proves himself worthy, then fine. I'll change my tune a little bit. But out of spring training with the camp he had, which was unspectacular, I don't actually think there's a worse fit for the opening day roster among the currently involved players. If LeMahieu is out for any length of time, which he is, you have to get yourself a Donovan Solano. You have to. He's still available. And if the Yankees weren't willing to pay whatever they weren't willing to pay for Michael Lorenzen, $4.5 million he went for, and I don't know what their offer was, if they had any conversations there. I was told he was on their radar, but I don't know how many conversations they actually had. If they weren't willing to spend that on pitching depth, you got to be willing to spend it on infield depth. And with LeMahieu going down for some length of time and Peraza down for 6 to 8 weeks, and by down, we mean shut down, not just out.
Yeah, but that's 3 months.
So. Yeah, 3 months for Peraza, who wasn't even somebody I wanted on the bench in the first place. Because, again, that counts as a failed prospect. Well, I'll just throw a guy on the bench. I was excited for them to go into this season with some form of intentionality on the bench. Trent Grisham being like, hey, we need a fourth outfielder. Let's go trade for one who has high upside. But at the very least, he'll be a defensive stalwart and he'll help eat some innings and take Aaron Judge off his feet. That's a bench spot being used. That's not just, oh, we eventually have to, beyond our starters, we got to just put some guys on the roster. It used to be Tim Raines and Daryl Strawberry when the Yankees were a dynasty. They used to have old Hall of Famers on their last legs on the bench. Now it's like, what top 100 prospect has regressed the last couple of years? Can we just throw them? Can we throw them in there? Yeah, they might benefit from regular reps, but they might just struggle with regular reps. They might just be not very good. Can we just put them on the bench? Great. Other teams have competitions for spots. The Yankees are just like, who's available? You want to be on our bench? I guess you can be. And then do you want to take only high leverage opportunities? Because that's really what bench players do. They come in blowouts, or they only take high leverage plate appearances to have matchup advantages and stuff. So I was bummed out by the depth chart being changed because the depth chart already wasn't deep enough for me. No. So Yordan Bebas got a chance to play third today, last ditch ever to see if he could play third. And he got hit in the head before the game and got scratched. Didn't play today. Facial contusion, no concussion, they say. What? I mean, look, it's not like they lost a roster guy. He wasn't going to make the team. But they were like, hey, let's see what we got here. We don't even get to see it because he's scratched. He has to go to the hospital. Cool. It's got to be someone from outside the organization. It's got to be Solano. It's got to be Tony Kemp. It's got to be Josh Harrison, who's got a lot of versatility. Teams are going to cut players in the next couple of days. If the Yankees don't sign one, it should be Solano. He's an actual major leaguer. He's an above average 100 OPS. But he might be a better player than DJ LeMahieu right now at the plate, not in the field. But he might be a better hitter than DJ LeMahieu right now. So that's my move. If you won't do that, you want to save money, you want to wait till the season starts, see how things shake out, go get yourself a Harrison or a Kemp or somebody else who ends up opting out of a minor league deal. A name brand is better right now than Kevin Smith. It just is.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, Brian Hoke, did we mention it last week? I don't remember if we did.
I'm not sure.
Brian Hoke wondered if the Yankees could trade for Gio Urshela, who signed a $1.5 million deal with the Tigers. The other Tigers options are mashing this spring. Gio has been getting hits, but he's not getting any extra base hits and he's not walking. So that might factor in. I know that when he had signed with the Tigers, the Yankees were also involved. So were the Mets. And there was belief that he signed with the Tigers because there was a better shot of him earning a starting job on opening day. But if that's not the case in Detroit, then why wouldn't a trade be on the table? I would do that in a second. I think anybody would. That would greatly improve the bench. That would kind of take pressure off the team to definitely play Oswaldo Cabrera as much as they might plan to, or rush Oswald Peraza back after he's ready to go. I don't know if those guys are major league ready. I know they have proven so in very short spurts, but you know, last year was bad for both of them, and this spring really has not been good for either of them either. I know Cabrera has improved. He started 1 for 21 and he's been good ever since, but
up lately. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's still tough to see stretches like that, because that's the problem with the Yankees. They're very boom or bust, and you go into these slumps and it's an absolute killer. The struggles on that end offensively definitely affect the defensive end. We've seen it with a ton of players. So someone like Cabrera, who was brought in last year to be an outfielder, which he isn't, because they thought he had that good showing in 2022, his outfield defense regressed, and so did his bat. And there's still much more to be proven there than I think we all might realize. So you bring in a guy like Urshela, it costs you no money. Maybe it costs you a prospect, I don't know, but that gives you three bench spots that are filled meaningfully. Backup catcher, whether it's Wells or Trevino, that's a great spot. Fourth outfielder, Trent Grisham, that's a great spot. Gio Urshela, shortstop, second base, third base, that's a great spot. Now, okay, last guy on the bench can be nonsense man or prospect that you want to see log some reps. But again, use it wisely. So I'm on board with Tony Kemp's a great option, lefty hitter, someone who could benefit in this lineup. because of all the good hitters surrounding him. I know he hasn't been the same offensively for quite some time. And
Cameron Maben vibes, though. Like, yeah, if you want to talk about a clubhouse addition, too, like, I'm sorry, Tony Kemp brings you more experience and upside than Kevin Smith, especially because you can just stash Kevin Smith. You like him so much, put him in AAA. I hope it works out. He's a hometown kid. He's a Long Island guy, childhood Yankee fan. I'd love to see Kevin Smith go to AAA, hit 330, force the issue, put yourself in the mix for a call-up midseason. The bench is obviously not going to be locked airtight all year. You're going to have the ability to wriggle your way onto there. But to just go with him on opening day after he didn't do much offensively or defensively this spring, he made a bad error the other day in the Carlos Rodon start that I'm sure we'll eventually talk about. The 244 average, 643 OPS this spring. Spring stats don't mean much, but if somebody's spring stats are in line with their very poor regular season stats, then how am I supposed to glean, like, oh, yeah, they made a leap? That's a good use of a roster spot. Smith in the regular season has performed poorly. Smith in spring training performed poorly. So I learned nothing about him. I'm not impugning him based on these stats, but I don't know how you can look at what he just did and be like, he earned it. He really did. Like, I don't know. He's barely factored into my spring assessment at all. And now he might make the roster.
Yeah. And spring stats do matter for someone like this. He should be competing for a spot. He's not a shoo-in for a spot. Someone who's a shoo-in for a spot would be, you know, Luke Weaver. You signed him to a $2 million deal. You spent the money. He's got to make the team. You liked what you saw from him last year. Kevin Smith was not here. Is not historically a good performer. Never really had a good MLB season. Luke Weaver at least had flashes of potential. So his spring stats matter. Oswaldo Cabrera's spring stats, they matter. He needs to rebound.
Yeah, they matter.
Oswald Peraza's spring stats, they would have mattered if he was healthy.
And they were awful when he was.
Yeah. So it's like, so yeah, in a vacuum, they don't define a player, but people who need to take the next step, like spring stats mattered last year for Anthony Volpe and Oswald Peraza. That was a competition. I will continue to argue that Oswald Peraza was put in a bad position. Because he had come up earlier, he had actually impacted the team positively. And then he was put in a, and then the team said to him, great, now you have to earn it. And it always seemed like Anthony Volpe was going to win that job. And the Yankees didn't capitalize in any way on Peraza's versatility or his trade value. So, it seems like the Yankees are not using spring training properly, but nonetheless, we have roster decisions. Yeah. Like you said, pitching staff is essentially set unless, I don't know who could get dumped between now and Thursday where we're going to be like, sign him now, bring him in. Like, yeah. What Sherman said, I agree with every team should be doing it. Every team should be on the lookout for options that are let go that could easily fit your team. But I don't see anybody letting an impact starter go or a high leverage bullpen arm go. And the fringe guys that the Yankees have on the bullpen, I'd rather have them than anybody else out there, even without knowing who they are. I'd rather have Clayton Beter. I'd rather have Nick Birdie.
Yeah.
I'd rather have Luke Weaver for now to see what he can do. And I guess like Ian Hamilton too. I don't know who I would sub out here. I want to see what we have in these guys that we've harnessed.
I tell you, the discourse is going to be so bad early in the season. Prepare for it. If any Yankee pitcher struggles at all, people are going to be like, oh my God, I can't believe they traded all their pitching depth to the Padres, leaving out that they traded it for Juan Soto. They got Juan Soto in exchange. Like, you're not going to be able to get that through anybody's head. They traded some of their pitching depth to the Padres. They traded Michael King coming off a Yankees career high in innings to the Padres. And good luck to Michael King.
He made a relief appearance.
Good luck to Michael King this year. I hope he pitches well. That's a loss for the Yankees. Johnny Brito got rocked in the first Seoul Series game, pitched a good 1 month for the Yankees last year in relief down the stretch. That's a guy you trade without Juan Soto even being in the conversation. That's a guy you turn into an asset with a good month and a half. That's a guy you trade. Randy Vasquez was awful this spring for the Padres, despite showing incredible stuff but the inability to harness it. That's a guy you trade, especially if you have live arms in the farm system. Drew Thorpe is your top pitching prospect, depending on he's right up there with Will Warren. He's right up there with Chase Hampton. Brock Selvidge is coming up behind him. There are a lot of arms in the Yankees top pitching prospect mix. Thorpe was the most polished with the lower ceiling. So they snuck him into that Padres trade too. And the Padres already traded him to the Chicago White Sox. So King is a relatively big loss, but one that they think they can weather and make up for, and one that they have to sacrifice to get Juan Soto. Juan Soto is in the lineup. I'm not going to entertain this one at all, especially because whenever a Yankee starter struggled in the spring or a Yankees depth piece, I was getting messages like, man, that Yankees pitching depth. Ugh. And I kept having to bite my tongue and be like, does your team have better pitching depth than this? Like, did you not watch? I saw some people doing reactions to Luis Gil getting named the fifth starter. They were doing like cringe memes. And it's like, did you watch Luis Gil?
It's the best starter of the spring.
The best starter of the spring, throwing 99, cut action on the fastball, hidden corner. So spring performance, who knows? I don't know how it translates. As a fifth starter, I'll take Luis Gil, thank you very much, in his current form for however many innings he can give me, over Julio Teheran, who's like the best guy on this free agent puddle that I can come up with, who opted out of his Orioles deal and might still come back to Baltimore. But you're asking me, hey, who are the higher upside guys? Who might they fall in love with? Teheran comes to mind, but I'm not removing Beater. I'm not removing Birdie. I'm not removing Keel from the fifth starter spot. I would put Will Warren in the rotation rather than use a roster spot on Julio Teheran. And the only unfortunate part is I wouldn't remove anyone for that level of player. The Yankees last year removed somebody who'd made the roster in favor of they removed Esteban Florial in favor of Franchi Cordero at the last minute. So I'm not in love with any of these pitching depth options. Could the Yankees randomly assess that some deeply flawed former major leaguer is the superior option to Beater or Birdie? God forbid. Yeah, they could, because last year we all wanted to see Florial get a chance in the bench spot. Imperfect, but fine. Higher upside than Kevin Smith. And last second, they go, no, we need Franchi Cordero's light tower power and complete lack of defense and inability to play first base, where he kept getting plugged in Boston, dropping pop-ups and hitting 164 with walk-off 480-foot grand slams, but nothing else of note. He comes to the Yankees, he homers, he's like 3 for his first 10, and then he's like 2 for his next 46. So they might see somebody who's objectively not an upgrade and go get him and go shove Beater back to the minors, but I'd rather they just roll with this to start. Houston, not an easy place to play. Spoiler alert, no. Yankees haven't had a lot of fun there in recent years. I'd much rather see what these kids have. What's the best series the Yankees have played in Houston in the last 4 or 5 years?
With all their kids.
The last one.
Austin Wells, Jason Dominguez.
Last one was pretty good. The rest have been, by and large, awful. Gary Sanchez punching Ken Giles in the face using his Beetlejuice mind powers to get him to hit his own jaw with his fist. And then Severino threw a shutout in, I believe, that same series. And then this one from September with Dominguez and Wells and Pereira and Volpe. Those were the two good ones.
That's it. So we're waiting on these. We're waiting on what, the final two bench spots. And that's it. Pitching staff, like we said, it's just Beater and Birdie, right? Those were the only unknowns.
Yeah, it's Beater and Birdie. They've made the team. Dennis Santana was suspected to be competing for a role as well. He's out of options. So if they took him, they had to take him all year or demote him and lose him. So that wasn't exactly appealing. And he's not exactly. He's a high upside arm, but not exactly a high performance.
He's been around.
He's been around. He's been a Dodger. He never sticks there. He's starting the Mexico scrimmage series game tonight. So best of luck. Again, I don't good for the Yankees for sending Giancarlo Stanton and Jose Trevino to Mexico. I'm not watching these. I wish they weren't available to me. And I certainly wish Robinson Cano and some pitcher had not taken aim at the New York Yankees.
Yeah, the
J squad with Oscar Gonzalez at the plate. But yeah, I had to think about it. It had to come across my feed. I wish it hadn't. I just want the regular season so bad. I want an opening day roster. I don't want to watch any more spring games unless they look like today's, where Clark Schmidt goes 5 one-hit innings against the Mets and strikes out 6. He's ready. Marcus Stroman's ready. Can we just go?
Yeah. Those are the only two guys I'm feeling good about right now. Oof. But so I'm assuming what, Nick Birdie takes Garrett Cole's spot once he's placed on the IL?
A non-roster invitee. They're going to quickly transfer Cole. The problem is Tommy Canley supposedly comes back in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But the reality is that Tommy Canley never comes back when he says he's coming back. This is is Tommy Canley's injury going to linger? I don't fucking know. It lingered from September. It's March. This is already a lingering injury. This isn't a new one.
He's been injured since 2020.
He had this last year. So is it going to linger? You tell me. It's already lingered for a whole offseason plus. So when he comes back, presumably Beeter will get demoted.
Yeah.
Because that's how this team does things. Because even when Ron Marinaccio was killing it 2 years ago, they still use his options. And anytime they needed to clear a spot for any injured returning player, they were just like, Marinaccio goes down. They weren't checking stats. So if Beeter's great, he'll still go down. Maybe the time to talk about, too, the bullpen, I do overall feel good. But, hey, you know who's been really bad? You know who was bad against the Diablos Rojos yesterday? Jonathan Loaisiga.
He's not good. He's not good. I mean, I don't know what to tell you guys. He's had one good season. It was during 2021, which was, I mean, you could say last year was statistically the worst Yankee season in 30 years. 2021 was, in our lifetime, probably the most agonizing 162-game stretch.
Easily.
Because you could have tuned out last year. The Yankees were dead. The Yankees, in my opinion, were dead at the All-Star break. And they were definitely dead after the trade deadline when they opted to not do anything. So you knew at that point they were already treading water. They didn't get better. Injuries continued to cascade. There was no evidence that this team would improve at all. 2021 Yankees had all the expectations in the world. They actually improved at the trade deadline. They continued to tread water. They did dumb things. Then they lose the wild card game against the Red Sox because they failed to win one game against the A's or the Royals, which would have tipped the scales in their favor and given them the home game for that. So that was Jonathan Loaisiga's only good season. It was the only season in which he proved he can effectively pitch in high leverage situations. It was the only season in which he proved he could last as a multi-inning reliever. Every other year, one or the other, unable to pitch in high leverage situations, unable to give you the longevity because he's injured, or both. So the fact that the Yankees are of the belief that they can – and look, am I the biggest Michael King fan in the world? No. I hope he succeeds. I think that is a loss for the pitching staff because I think that the manner in which he improved and harnessed his stuff was much more considerable than what Jonathan Loaisiga has done. And although Michael King really has only been good for about three quarters of a full season, because remember – he was lights out for that first half of 2022, then didn't play for the rest of the year because he hurt his elbow. And then last year he was very much touch and go. And then he played, and then he gets shifted back to the rotation and ends up being good for 5 weeks. So his body of work is really much not considerable, but I think we can say that his stretch at any point for that 2022 run was better than anything Jonathan Loaisiga has done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm willing to say that at least. And then the fact that he was able to at least replicate a portion of that success the year after fracturing his elbow, I think is notable. That's just me. Jonathan Loaisiga, again, never proven to be consistent, never proven to be healthy. I think this is, I will go back on the record and say this was a mistake for the Yankees to tender him a contract. There was no need to give this guy $3 million, especially when they were going into an offseason where they were being super cost conscious because they knew they were probably going to exceed the final luxury tax threshold. And now you're going to have, you already had Tommy Canley on this roster, and he's making $5 million and he's an injury liability. You have Nestor Cortez coming off a shoulder injury. You have Carlos Rodon coming off injuries and suspect play. You have Clay Holmes, who is either really good or really bad. You have Marcus Stroman, who is a good pitcher, but is probably only good for 130 innings. So to think that you have Ian Hamilton, who was great, but also succumbed to injuries and missed half the year, essentially, last year. To think Jonathan Loaisiga could replicate what Michael King had done in that role, which was super unique and like very much garnered him a lot of interest on the trade market because that was not the only deal he was discussed in over the past year or so is crazy. And the fact that the Yankees alluded to non-tendering Loaisiga and then opted to tender him a contract anyway and give him this money, he's been bad this spring. Again, there's nothing here that is going to show us that he can erase 6 to 9 outs. I don't remember the last time I saw that without, you know, being on the edge of my seat. So
hasn't gotten through a spring outing yet and spring training, but has not gotten through a spring outing yet without allowing a run. Has allowed a run in every outing. Went to Mexico and gave up runs yesterday. So, and also, how many outings could that possibly be? Every outing? You're right. Not that many outings. Four. But that's even worse. Four outings all spring, and now he's going to step into the eighth inning role or multi-inning relief for the New York Yankees opening day? Give me a break.
Give me a break.
No longer a sponsor. They took themselves
football cream.
Took themselves out of the mix. Football cream no longer sponsors the podcast.
No more football cream sponsors. I mean it's really crazy, and I like Jonathan Loaisiga's stuff. I love what he could be, but like after that 2021 season, people calling him, you know, the next Mariano, the Mariano in waiting. It's like, no, stop doing this. Stop doing this to people. Stop doing this to all these players who very much have not proven they can do that. And then on top of that, have all of these obstacles in their way. Someone like Loaisiga, health issues, someone like, you know, like Glaber, mental lapses, like stop putting like someone like Spencer Jones, Jason Dominguez, Anthony Volpe, young impressionable players who have yet to prove anything. Stop putting the pressure on them. There is no reason for it. It's only going to set them back. The team of yesteryear was a great one. We loved it. We had an amazing time. I think the only way that we can ever allude to comparisons there is the front office decision-making, not by the actual personnel. We cannot compare A to B because those players are not the same. They never will be. That was a generational crop of people. But the manner in which the Yankees operated, I think that's something we can comment on. And I think this move is very much indicative of that. I don't think the 96 to 2004 Yankees would have sat there and been like, you know what, Jonathan Loaisiga can probably carry the load in a very important, arguably the most important bullpen role. You know, as much as you might think Clay Holmes is important, Michael King has been the most important reliever on the Yankees over the last year and a half. And for them to think that somebody who Aaron Boone called out at the end of last year for never being healthy is going to accomplish that is nuts. Same goes for every other, you know, player on this role. Like same goes for the depth. We just talked about the depth. The fact that the Yankees thought that nothing would happen to the starting lineup or even the bench between the start of the preseason and the regular season is crazy because they never get out of any spring training unscathed. And this year they got hit with the worst of it. Gerrit Cole out 1 to 2 months. Oswald Peraza shut down for 2 months, probably out for three. DJ LeMahieu's foot injury. Whatever's happening with Aaron Judge. Mm-hmm. Scott Efros' secret back surgery. Tommy Canley's lingering shoulder injury. It literally, now you have Yorbit Vivas's face injury.
Anthony Rizzo's lat
that happened on Friday. Is there any update on that?
Yeah, he's playing today. He's DHing.
Okay, good. Great. So the complaining can stop there, I guess. But again, the Yankees can print bullpen arms. We're very optimistic and confident in that. But I don't think you can print a Michael King and, you know, have him disguised as Jonathan Loaisiga. It's not going to happen.
You certainly can't take an oft-injured version of a top-flight bullpen arm and suddenly turn him into Michael King. That's not that easy. Maybe if it is that easy,
sign us up.
Then no slander on Matt Blake ever again. But it's not that. It's not simple. And if Loaisiga wants to be the next Mariano Rivera, that's fantastic. But again, the 2021 season is pretty much the full body of work at this point. Started 2022 awful. Rebounded, eventually was trustworthy again by the time the playoffs rolled around. 2023, almost never there. And Aaron Boone, you're right, called him out at the end of the year, say, hey, I got to stay healthy. But, and then we're like, oh, non-tender coming. And no, non-tender not coming and actually promoted in the pecking order.
Yeah.
So we'll figure out how that. Luis Gil feels like a much safer bet when the rotation is hopefully healthier to be able to fill that Michael King role. But we'll all find out for ourselves soon enough.
Loaisiga making $2.5 million estimation could be higher than that.
Yeah.
If the Yankees had the foresight, I understand it's, you can't look into the future, but even if you just non-tendered him at the beginning of the offseason and said, you know what, we're going to figure something else out, or we'll bring him back for cheaper, which they probably could have done. I'm not saying this is a better option, but you could just have Michael Lorenzen for $2 million more to give you 15 starts at the beginning of the year. Because you have these injury problems in the rotation, and then he either fades to the back and eats innings out of the bullpen to give the rotation rest or to save the back end of the bullpen, or you trade him for something because someone's going to need pitching at some point. So that's the better use of an asset and of money. And I understand they could not have sat there and predicted, oh, Lorenz is probably going to make $4.5 million when the free agent market craters, but still 2.5 to 3 million for someone like a Weisiger who, what's his average performances per year? Let's see. He pitched in 9 games in 2018, 15 games in 2019, 12 games in 2020, 57 in 2021, 50 in 2022, but he regressed and had elbow issues. And that was his worst full season body of work. Mm-hmm. And then 17 games last year, after which he started the year injured and ended the year injured. So he ended the year dealing with an elbow injury that he had surgery for that kept him out at the beginning of the year. And then the Yankees said, you know what? We'll pay him again, even though that elbow injury is lingering. And we're going to put him in the most important bullpen spot that we have created for ourselves. So that's where the frustration lies from.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, we sure will pay him again, and if it doesn't work out, it'll be Luke Weaver or Clayton Beater or Luis Gil, I guess.
Clayton Weaver.
I don't think it's going to work out, folks. I don't think it's going to. It could.
Think.
If he's on the roster active in August, I'll be very surprised. Yeah, that's all. That's that on that. Now, you want to talk about Carlos Rodon, I'm sure. So we ended the spring. Last three starts, Rodon, Stroman, and Clark Schmidt today. Schmidt, great. Stroman, six shutty yesterday. They win that game 1-0. Who cares? But pretty cool. Six shutty. Stroman gets Ke'Bryan Hayes on a sword and does like a shimmy off the mound. I'm ready to see him. Fine. Give it to me. I'm ready. Carlos Rodon. So tough stuff. And I think we maybe are on different sides of the fence here. Because this is a bad start, right? Seven hits, four plus innings. Stuff wasn't quite as crisp as it has been in previous starts. Four swings and misses out of 36 fastballs thrown, I believe. River Avenue Blues took a shit all over him after the game and was like, haven't seen much of anything to be impressed with this spring for, you know, a guy who needed to come in and prove himself. Defense let him down. A couple of the runs late in that game scored because ball was thrown into the outfield. Run was taken off his ledger and put on the unearned runs column. Kevin Smith turned a single into a double with a throwing error. It got ugly, but he did get hit around. You have a two out ribby to Bryson Stott. Several of those runs early were, you know, just A to B to C to D, you know, single, sack fly, and you know, oops, run scored. Oopsie doopsie. Like, not great. He was not fantastic. Now, devil's advocate, he did hit 96 at the end of that start. Pumped it, was spamming the cutter, still messing around. He should know by now what he is. His primary goal should be to stay healthy at the end of the spring. He did that as long as he proved during the rest of spring that he does still exist within that body. And for me, he did. He was incredible in the two starts previously. Mm-hmm. 9 2/3 innings, one total hit. It was a home run. And 5 2/3 no-hit innings against the same Phillies team that he was forced to throw against twice. So it would make sense that he decided to mess around a little bit in the second one and maybe didn't go so great. Maybe he's not going to love looking at that line score. But WHIP this spring under 1, 0.98. For me, he took an actual step forward this spring. Now, did he take a number two starter step forward this spring? No, not for me. But for my money, it's not nearly as lackluster a spring as it could have been, yeah, which is what The Athletic called it. But I am curious your thoughts here, because you ripped Rodon a little bit after this start. It obviously does have fans nervous, because especially when you're seeing Stroman rounding into form, Schmidt rounding into form, and Rodon's best start was the one before this, and his final start before going to Houston was not very good. He betrayed a little bit, but not very good.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not ripping Rodon. I'm lamenting about the situation. Once again, one opportunity left to just go out on a high note and can't do that whatsoever. I understand the velocity was there, but you have two strikeouts in four innings, blah. You give up seven hits, blah. 82 pitches and 50 strikes in the four innings. Like, that's not efficient at all. And whether he was experimenting here or not, we could argue against both of those cases. If he's not experimenting and he's getting rocked, then that's a fucking problem.
Yeah.
Okay. At the end of the spring, you should have your shit together. And if you're just going at the lineup and you're looking to get a quality outing, like, it should not look like, am I saying it should be completely unblemished? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. The hitters, the hitters at this point have seen enough major league pitching where they're going to be able to turn on a 96, 97 mile an hour fastball. They're going to be able to get some of the pitcher's cadences down. I'm not saying that. Seven hits, four earned runs, and really the two that were not charged were earned. The runners had gotten on, and the Yankees just did dumb shit. So like those guys were on base, and they advanced one base because of misplays in the field. Okay, sure. If you're messing around this late in spring training, I ask why. Why are we messing around on the last start of spring training? Why are we not using this as a confidence booster? Why, at this point in spring training, after you had taken the mound four times, do you not have a process down where you feel the need to tinker some more in days before opening day? Those are my questions. Mm-hmm. Then you have the efficiency aspect of it, which I kind of alluded to. He's only had one efficient outing this spring, and it was that one against the Phillies where he didn't give up a hit across 5 2/3 innings, which, again, great outing. But again, more of the Yankees boom or bust. It's either you're great or you're unpitchable. And I would say that the start before that against the Red Sox was good, because it was, but 68 pitches in four innings. Like, he's not doing himself any favors with the efficiency. Only three strikeouts. Where have Rodon's strikeouts gone? Outside of that first outing against Toronto where he struck out five batters in 2 2/3, mm-hmm, he threw 48 pitches in that outing too. Nothing. There is no consistency here. There's no telltale of the absolute improvement, right? So, like, we don't have anything to base. We can't say, oh, you know what? He's getting through innings pretty fast. Or, oh, you know what? The velocity is absolutely there. Oh, you know what? The command is absolutely there. Every start, something is different, whether it's good or bad. So to me, nothing is lining up for Carlos Rodon. It seems just like a mixed bag of here's what you're getting today, we guess. So that's where my concern lies. And I think it's a fairly big concern now that Gerrit Cole is down, now that we're going to, now that before Clark Schmidt took the mound today, I was a tad worried about him because he was another one. Wasn't exactly tossing efficient outings this spring. Had a lot to prove after throwing, 60 innings last year. So you know he's going to be on some sort of limit innings restriction as the campaign goes on.
Well, the Yankees say no. So they might break their own promise, but they claim to Joel Sherman, Luis Gil, no arbitrary innings cap this year. We're not doing that anymore. But of course, you can't, tough to believe. And also, if you get to a certain point and somebody gets hurt, then obviously they're going to go right back to the arbitrary innings cap.
So, okay. So, you know what? I actually didn't see that, but even if I did see it, I wouldn't have bought it. Sure. Because the Yankees could say right now, no innings restrictions for whomever, but things change very quickly. You could have another injury in the starting rotation, and that kind of shakes things up and puts more pressure on somebody like Clark Schmidt, and you don't want that. But anyway, back to Rodon. You could take the silver lining here that he got through spring healthy. And I am high on that because that is huge. But again, how low is the bar? We're going to celebrate somebody getting through spring healthy. And I don't want to be, he's confident about it, which I'm thrilled with, I guess. I'm happy that he's at least feeling well, or at least he's able to put on a face that says that he's feeling well. But I'm not going to sit here as a fan and be like, hey, you know what? He got through it healthy. He's going to be fine. I don't know if that's the case, because there are now mental factors that have come into play as a result of his physical health impacting him last year. And now there's even more pressure on him because of Gerrit Cole being down and because of the other question marks in the rotation. So I am very glad to see Clark Schmidt and Marcus Stroman on the right path. I think we're both cautiously optimistic about Nestor Cortez's performance. We just kind of needed him to get out there and show that he had the mix of stuff, whether he was getting hit or not. It was a little bit of a different situation than Rodon, because Rodon was a Cy Young candidate and kind of is a Cy Young candidate, and Nestor Cortez is not. So it's two different sets of expectations there. But for Rodon, like, it's just the narrative thing. It's like what we talked about at the end of that Blue Jays start. He was pitching well, and then last batter gives up a fucking home run, and it's like, what the hell? And then the Rays start, gives up the home run in the first at bat, and you're like, God damn it. Then he rebounds, and then he's getting back on track, and then home run in the last at bat, taken out of the game. God damn it.
Double homer. Like, it was immediate. It was like, this is actually a good start. We can forget that first pitch home run. We can write about this and be excited. And then Ahmed Rosario rips a double. Next batter destroys a home run. The line is muddied, and he's leaving the game. And then it's all this LOL Rodon shit on Twitter. And for good reason, I can't stop opposing fans from being like, sheesh, what happened to this guy? Awful contract. Because what you saw is what happened. Homer, nothing, 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 double homer. And then the line sucks. I get it.
Yeah. I'm not going to look at the line and be like, wow, that was terrible. But the other thing to consider here, and this is the dumbest thing I'm probably ever going to say from an analysis perspective, it's not getting any easier. Now the regular season starts. You're facing lineups that are fully stacked. Why am I going to think that Carlos Rodon's spring, based on these numbers, is going to foreshadow good things to come? There's just no reason for me to think that, outside of just being hopeful. And I am hopeful. I want him to do well, but from the box score, from what we've seen, you know, the command yesterday was bad. The command yesterday was not good. So that doesn't get me excited for him to start what, Saturday against the Astros? That's where I'm at here. I'm not throwing, you know, the beginning of the season away. I'm not already writing off what Carlos Rodon can do this year, but that last spring start was not good. And I don't know why anybody would think that him getting through spring healthy is like the most major thing that needed to happen, because we needed that and a semblance of an, you know, more than one really good performance. And he really only had one.
Pros: the Yankees don't have to start cold weather. Oh, great. No North opening day. Cons: it's the Astros and the Diamondbacks.
Yeah.
It's the Astros who kill us on the road, and the Diamondbacks were in the World Series last year and are talking about signing Jordan Montgomery. So rough. That's a rough first week if you're at full strength, and the Yankees are not. So it's a long season. Seasons are, you know, you can say, oh, you can lose a division in April. You can lose a division in April, I guess, but you can't lose a playoff spot in April, and you also can't lose a division in week one. So we'll see, but they got to tread water at least. They got to be at least 3-4 end of the first week of the season. And that's going to be tough. Please. If these guys can't provide length, and if you got rookies going, but at least this year's rotation doesn't have Domingo Herman. And a hearty farewell to right-handed pitcher Domingo Herman, whose serious issues I do not want to make light of and thus won't, but he did do an interview with, I believe, Randy Miller. So it's a shocker I saw this, considering how blocked I am, the most blocked you can be. But he's a Pirate now. He left the Yankees after an event in the clubhouse where he smashed a TV, approached Aaron Boone violently, and was told to go cool off in the sauna. They said he was intoxicated. He disputes that, which means, I guess, according to him, cold sober, he smashed a TV and violently threatened Aaron Boone a month after pitching a perfect game. That's not good. Exactly comforting. In this piece, he went to rehab to collect the rest of his Yankees paycheck as a stipulation to receive that paycheck, but said he still drinks, because he doesn't have a problem. He can go a month or two without drinking, but he does it anyway because he's fine and can control himself. Also, friends and family said they were concerned about Herman because after leaving rehab, he disappeared for a few days, at which point they thought he might be drunk drinking again. Aroldis Chapman in this piece says, "I've tried everything to get him back on the right track." And that was supposed to be, again, a quote that like endorsed him and was pro Herman. He was like, "He's a good guy. I've tried everything. It didn't work last year. I can't think of someone who deserves a ninth chance less." And the Yankees were poised to give him at least eight of those chances and finally cut bait this year. I congratulate them for taking common sense advice that they should have taken a long time ago. The trouble endorsing this man, having him wear your uniform, is not worth the 140 innings of 4.58 baseball that you get from him, from employing him. The perfect game is a tainted memory. If it wasn't when it happened, it certainly is now. And best of luck to the Pittsburgh Pirates, who apparently did no homework whatsoever.
More of a reflection on the Yankees. I mean, I don't, you're going to fault the Pirates here. I mean, what are the Pirates? The Pirates have not done anything of note or anything of class in, I don't know how long. I guess bringing back Andrew McCutchen was cool for a second. But otherwise, they've been irrelevant. They've been at the forefront of baseball's ownership problem with spending and the discussion of having salary floors. So there'd be a little bit more of a way to bridge the gap between the lowest spenders and the highest spenders. So this does not, him being with the Pirates, that couldn't be less of a concern for me. Here, though, the Yankees employed this man for four extra years after there was an alleged domestic violence incident that was witnessed in the parking lot of a team charity event.
Joe Torre saw it.
Joe Torre literally saw it.
I actually don't know if he saw it or was at the event and someone reported it directly to him, but he got in action, handling it very quickly. 81 game suspension. The league's domestic violence policy. Again, a lot of people use the excuse of that domestic partner is now his wife.
Yeah.
All I'll say is that you, the random layperson, don't really need to be making excuses for Domingo Herman. And he is allowed to live on Earth. He's allowed to keep working on himself. He's allowed to keep trying to get better every day. He does not need to be on the New York Yankees after having endless chances to prove himself as an upstanding member of the and just a contributor and someone who they can rely upon. Relying upon someone is important. And they couldn't over and over again. He took himself out of a playoff series. He took himself out of the 2020 season. And he took himself out of last season too. In this interview, he does not seem remorseful at all. He talks about how he felt like he got special treatment and was able to hang out with the staff because this was his second time at the rehab center. Again, feel however you feel about who deserves a chance and what chance they deserve, but I don't need to want that person on the team that I support. And I don't, and I didn't, and I still don't.
Yeah, it's more of a question of like, what's the character evaluation when the Yankees sign somebody? Because one of our coworkers made a great point today and was like, so you can't have facial hair on the Yankees, but you could have a checkered past, we guess, and we'll accept that. And again, Domingo Herman is far removed from that situation. In my opinion, I'm not a fan of just constantly holding that against somebody for and defining that as who they are. But this is not the lone incident with Domingo Herman. Domingo Herman has had multiple poor judgments of character after that. And the fact that the Yankees allowed that to persist for what? 16 starts a year at 4.5 ERA. Like, I do understand to some capacity employing somebody who might be a troubling character but is a tremendous baseball player. Would I do that myself? I don't know. I'm not an owner, but I can at least understand it because, you know, it's a game of business, and you know, when business is involved, people do shady stuff and people throw morals out the window, which that's just the reality of how it goes. But Domingo Herman was not very much not a good baseball player, had all these issues, played a role in derailing a couple of Yankee seasons. And now you see him leave the team and have these statements. And again, another fucking asshole that grows a beard the second they leave the Yankees. All of these people are assholes. Not all of you want a beard. There is no way that this many people want a beard. I grow facial hair. A beard is very annoying for me. There is no way every single player who leaves the Yankees needs a beard. But everybody who leaves the Yankees needs a beard. And Domingo Germán is the latest one to need a fucking beard. So that's more of the comical aspect of what I'm talking about.
If you told me not to shave, if you told me you got to shave, I would. I absolutely would.
I would have no problem with it. But the fact that all these people need to have facial hair the day after they leave the Yankees is just, it's baffling to me. But nonetheless, character concerns with the Yankees. Chapman was here before. The Yankees had done that. And look how it ended up biting them. He gave up on the team in his final fucking year here. So
my least favorite Yankee of all time.
Yeah,
this is
just where I'm confused. It's the gold standard of baseball. Yet there's no tried and true way of evaluating it. Like, remember when Derek Jeter was the captain and
yes.
Remember that? Remember yes, when I that do. Happened in franchise yes, history? And there was just an accountability, and I hate to sound like an old man because I'm not, I'm only 33, but there was accountability. Everybody had to be held accountable. The captain held players accountable. I'm not saying Aaron Judge doesn't do that, but like, how are we letting somebody as insignificant and as, you know, marginally talented as Domingo Germán remain on this roster for 4 years after he had done something that would probably get you kicked off of most teams? And then watch him leave, go to an even worse organization, or arguably the worst organization in the sport, probably bottom three, and then continue to talk about like nothing was ever an issue and that he can kind of do whatever the hell he wants. So how nobody detected that over that long of a span with the Yankees is beyond me. And I think it just speaks to their recruitment on that level. When you're talking about, evaluating character, you know, we joke about it all the time, but like, feeling out the vibes. Domingo Germán's not a vibes guy to me. Don't know how he would be to anybody, but that all of that coming out now is more of a concern with, you know, how the Yankees handle things in the future. And I think they've done things a little bit better, but that's a big black mark.
Well, so far we're 2 for 2 on destroying a TV, getting you dealt elsewhere. Chris Sale is now in Atlanta. Chris Sale's an Atlanta Brave, and Domingo Germán is a Pittsburgh Pirate. We won't see Domingo Germán on opening day. That feels good in a Yankee uniform. We will see plenty of guys. Roster decisions yet to be made. I believe some mystery men are going to find their way to the New York Yankees. There will be an infielder on the team in 3 days who you're probably barely thinking about right now. Isn't that kind of fun?
Yeah.
Check out the site. Go to yanksgoyard.com. We'll keep you updated on the latest news. Follow us on Twitter. Formerly known as Twitter, currently known as X, Yanks Go Yard FS. We'll post all the updated news there as well, because no podcast live on Thursday. Thursday's podcast will be featuring a New York Yankees top prospect, hopefully, again. And if it's not Thursday, it'll be soon, because this guy is great. He's excited. He's ready to do it. He wants to record this week, though. Yanks are still playing. He was playing games yesterday. That's the only reason why I'm like, are we really going to do this week? Like, I feel like he didn't think he was going to still be playing. And I'm going to, I don't know. I feel like when he committed to it, he didn't know he was still going to be active. But we shall see. We shall see him and hit him up later. And if not, it will be soon, though. My name is Adam Weinrub. You can find me on Twitter at Adam Weinrub. Thomas Carinante, where can the people find you?
I am at Tommy's_takes. You can also find us at the official Yanks Go Yard Twitter account. At Yanks Go Yard FS stands for fansided. That's who we work for.
Yep.
The website, yanksgoyard.com. A lot of content there for you. Opening day's right around the corner. We're going to have even more with the down to the wire roster decisions, any last minute trades or signings. We're your guys. You need a guy? We got you a guy. We got two guys for you. So thanks for all the support. Thanks for reading. Thanks for tuning in. It's really been a hell of an offseason. We made it, folks. We have made it. Is it under the best circumstances? I would say no, but guess what? Clean slate, get to start all over again. Get to get stronger throughout the year, assuming
these guys are on the right timetables, but it's a new year of Yankees baseball. It's the spring version of Christmas, and we welcome you. Thank you for all the support, and we will talk to you next week. But on opening day, we will be here in spirit, and you will hear from us for sure. So take care, everybody. Let's go, Yankees.
Spring Christmas, indeed. We'll see you later in the week. Let's go, Yankees.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.